Hello and welcome to the Pure Football Podcast. This is the story, stats and tactics about football in Scotland and beyond for fans by fans. I'm Owen Brown and I'm joined on this, our flagship show, by co-host Gavin Miller. How are you, Gavin?
Yeah, I'm really good, mate. Just before we get into it, a quick question for you. Who was the better storm, Dennis or Kira?
Oh, wow. I think, well, Dennis isn't over yet, I guess you could claim. Kira got me a day off work, so Kira was definitely the better storm in my view. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to say the same. I was a big fan of the, you know, the naming of Storm Dennis. It just sounds so unferocious.
Dennis like, the Menace, yeah. Aye, but yeah, definitely Kira came out tops for me, at least for the day of work. Absolutely ideal. So this week on the Pure Football show, we're going to be discussing a key middle-of-the-table Premiership clash between Kilmarnock and Hibs, a top-of-the-table battle between Cove Rangers and Edinburgh City in League Two, and then we're going to be previewing some European games with FC Copenhagen against Celtic and SC Braga against Rangers in the Europa League. And talking of European football, I thought I should also mention for anybody out there to please keep an eye and ear out for the first episode of the new Pure Football show, which will be all about continental football. We've assembled a crack squad of experts who will be talking about league football in France, Spain, Italy and Germany, as well as kind of any big stories in Europe and, of course, club competitions such as the Champions League. Very excited for that to start. So please do subscribe to Pure Football wherever you get your podcasts and put notifications on so that you don't miss out when that first episode drops. So let's kind of kick us off with that Scottish Premiership clash then. Kilmarnock had won their three previous league matches, but Hibs triumphed in this game 2-1 at Rugby Park to keep Kilmarnock seventh in the table and leave Hibs now, pretty remarkably, only 5 points off third place. Do you have any kind of thoughts on this match, Gavin? You want to talk us through what you took away from it?
Yeah, so first of all, I was quite excited about going into this game. I think we're both being fans of Greg Docherty, and you know, it's easy to say we're both glad that he's been freed. I was really excited to see how he would perform in this game, and he definitely didn't let me down. There's some other people in this game that I was really intrigued to see. Dario Del Fabbro is someone that I really like. Martin Boyle is playing some great football just now. And also, I was interested to see how Eamon Brophy got on after his performance against Rangers. So there was a lot of things going into this game that I was quite excited to watch out for. So yeah, pre-game it was quite a good game to look into, and I felt that you know, the first half probably Hibs had the better of it in terms of chances and looked a little bit more threatening on the ball. Kilmarnock, I know they got three wins on the bounce, but I still don't think that it's clear to me what they're good at, if that makes sense, in an attacking sense. I find it hard to understand like what their pattern of play is out with corners.
I think maybe the goal against Rangers, the winner, would maybe, you know, kind of typify some of the things they might hope to do now, you know, with the ball up to Kabamba, who's likely to win most things in the air, and then, you know, hopefully Brophy can create a shot for himself off the second ball. I guess that would be the way I would think about it. I think the thing for me about Kilmarnock that maybe sticks out right now is, as much as there's been a bit of praise about them winning games, they haven't had a clean sheet in the league since the 4th of December, which is about 12 games ago. No clean sheets under Dyer in the league at all. So I think as much as, yeah, there's been those three wins on the bounce and so on, and there has been maybe this kind of shift to sort of 4-4-2 with Kabamba and Brophy tallying up front, I'm not sure if that's not maybe been at the expense of a bit of a lack of security at the back, but maybe also in midfield. It's given Power and Dicker a lot of work to do on their own, you know, particularly when, you know, maybe the guys playing alongside them, such as maybe Burke or McKenzie or so on, really their strengths are kind of being going forward on the ball. Still some hesitation about them. And I guess we saw this play out in the match. I mean, obviously they went on to lose. I felt it wasn't a dominant performance by Hibs, but certainly the opener was possibly well-deserved and certainly a good way to open this game. Do you want to talk us through what happened for our guy, Greg Docherty?
Yeah, so the ball sort of breaks out wide. Joe Newell does well. I thought Chris Burke maybe could have just put it out for the corner rather than, you know, maybe a little bit more of awareness around about what's going on at that point and just give Kilmarnock a chance to regroup.
Yep.
So that was maybe something that he could have done, or potentially, you know, try and put it out for a throw-in or something. But Joe Newell does well, quite persistent. Then picks out Greg Docherty, who's in a little bit of space. Maybe, again, being a little bit critical here, but I thought O'Donnell could have maybe got to him a little bit quicker. But as the other thing that really stood out for me in this goal, out with it, you know, it was an absolute outstanding strike. But if you watch Stephen O'Donnell's body shape, it's all over the place.
Yeah, that's not. I mean, surely you're thinking take him down a line or show him away from the danger zone. But you're right; he doesn't seem to really get it into his head exactly what he wants to do quick enough.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe that's because, I mean, it was a bit of a chance out of nothing because of what you said about where the ball was and the fact that it really should have gone out of play. So, you know, maybe just he had thought it was going to go for a goal kick or a corner and had switched off in some way. But yeah, either way, he got punished, didn't he? An incredible strike from Doherty once he got that bit of space onto his right foot.
Yeah, brilliant goal, and I'm delighted for him. And I just wanted to quickly touch on this. I know that it's probably been said a million times over, but to me, he is the little bit of difference that I'm surprised Steven Gerrard didn't give more of a chance to. I think he is different to a lot of the players that Rangers have in terms of their midfield. Maybe it offers a little bit more dynamic in terms of how he plays compared to, you know, the midfield three that they normally play. And Rangers really struggle to break teams down. Docherty might have been able to contribute something. And with his like levels of fitness that are well documented, I really am surprised that he never got more of a look in. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this for a long time, that we both like him. Not necessarily, I think, for either of us saying that he would be a starter for Rangers, but I don't really understand. I know they've got quite a lot of options in midfield, but if you're going to be playing probably three central midfielders most of the time, then it means there's room for people. And like you say, the sort of things that we know about him just made me think that this would be somebody that Gerrard would like. I don't quite understand it, but I guess he just thought he wasn't really at the level yet and needed to go out. And I'm, you know what, I, you know, for me, all that really matters is that a player is now getting minutes and seems to be, you know, doing well and you know, he can, in effect, you know, prove that that might have been a mistake from Gerrard. And then in the summer, we'll see what happens, whether that means that he gets a chance next season at Rangers or maybe he gets a permanent move somewhere else. But anyway, I'm delighted for him. I think he performed really well, not just at the weekend, but in the previous game for Hibs, where he was man of the match. And I still think there's a bit to work on. So as much as you say, you know, his dynamism and his, you know, the fact he can be everywhere is really good. He's had these kind of, you know, key moments such as that goal. I think there were some times in the game against Kilmarnock where defensively, particularly when he came into the kind of defensive side on the left of midfield, that it wasn't ideal. I think sometimes, and this is maybe just partly it being a new team that maybe doesn't have a definitely settled midfield, he didn't necessarily know when to track or when to cover and, you know, which man to stay with when there was an interplay. But that'll come, I hope, because I really like him. So that was obviously a goal after just 28 minutes. It didn't take long for Kilmarnock to get back in it. What would you make of the equaliser that happened 2 minutes later?
Terrible from Slivka. Falls asleep on Chris Burke, and he's the only... And I really think that... Slivka needs to be aware of the danger in the box, aware of what's behind him, what Chris Burke's doing, and I just think it was really avoidable from a Hibs point of view. Marciano probably didn't cover himself in glory in this either. I know that there's not a lot he really could have done, but I just felt that he sort of dived to the other side a little bit too quickly for my liking. And then it was, you know, all Burke had to do is get on target into the, you know, that area, and it's a goal. But
really good header, I thought. It was quite an awkward kind of I don't know, height the ball and wait to have to take it. I thought he did well to get it in. But yeah, like you say, it was a pity that Slivka was, you know, slightly asleep there, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, yeah, I just felt that it was was pretty poor from Slivka, and you know what, maybe I'm doing Burke a disservice, but I just felt that this was a really avoidable goal from Hibs, and, and just when I was thinking about like Hibs in terms of their defensive setup, I think without naming specific instances, I just feel like they're a team that is quite sloppy defensively, and maybe don't quite have that astute defensive mind to really lead them through defensive situations. I don't know if that makes sense, or if you feel any different.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I think that you would have to say that Hibs are still pretty inconsistent. I would say going into games, you always think there's a good chance of goals at either end of the pitch. Beat Ross County 3-0, but then draw 2-2 with St Mirren. I think that's something to keep an eye on. There's quite an interesting run of games for Hibs coming up. They play Livingston at home on Saturday, then Inverness in the Cup quarterfinals, and then it's an Edinburgh Derby on the 3rd of March at home. If they win those three games, then their season kind of takes on an entirely different complexion for me. Still plenty to think about defensively. I think they've conceded 42 goals in 27 games, which is a load. You know, need to sort of defend some defensive midfield. But I would say that maybe they might be thinking, well, that can be a task for the summer. You know, it's kind of in a situation now that, you know, nothing too bad can happen. Maybe that's something just to kind of pin for then. In terms of the next part of this game, though, Hibs, to their credit, we gained a lead right before halftime through Jackson. What did you make of that goal?
I feel like all I'm doing is criticising, you know, the opposition here, but I think I seen a tweet from, was it Craig Anderson, about Koprovic doesn't like to save the ball. He certainly didn't cover himself in glory in this one either. It was pretty scrappy in terms of how it all came about, but when I watched it back, like I looked at it a couple of times and thinking, what is he actually doing? It's like he doesn't want to save it.
After the Arfield one as well. He's a strange keeper, isn't he? And it seems that this game against Hibs, it seems as though Branescu was there but wasn't selected at last minute because he had some sort of cold. But I don't know why you'd still be there if you have a cold. But hey, Branescu has 8 clean sheets. I know some people have been a wee bit critical of him, and maybe he's not perfect, but it seems to me that he must be better than the current guy. Not a good goal to concede at all. And I felt that in the second half, it was a bit bitty, but Kilmarnock, and maybe this goes back to what you were saying about their kind of attacking plan, they never really seemed to me like they would equalise. There was nothing that was that threatening. I was wondering if part of that is that there's a little bit of a lack of ability to change the game for Kilmarnock at the moment. Yep. So when you play as a 4-4-2, when your attacking plan is this kind of, two guys, Brophy and Kabamba up front, it's quite a step to change things, because you're probably going to have to take one of those forwards off as your way of changing things. If you bring on another forward, it's just kind of ridiculous. But they maybe think that Kabamba and Brophy are working quite well together, so you'd maybe be concerned about bringing any one of them off. Can you rely on Brophy to score or make chances for himself that are in decent locations if Kabamba's not there? But Kabamba, can he, actually be a central attacker on his own, or is he more like a target man to get chances for other people? And then there's a real kind of lack of options on the bench. As a result of that, Dyer didn't make a substitution until the 80th minute, which, given you're chasing the game from right at half time and you're at home, that seems to me like a bit late, but maybe that's a knock on effect of having a lack of options.
I totally agree. And one of the things I was thinking about, so, Alan Power and Gary Dicker, I think it's their inability to contribute in the final third.
Well, they're having it a lot in a 4-4-2, right? Particularly given their age, right?
So, yeah, that's what.
Dicker's 33, Power's 32 now, I guess. Something like that. So, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Talk to me more about,
I was just going to say maybe El Macrini might be someone that, might have a little bit more success if you're trying to change the game, but sacrificing the defensive stability. If you're chasing the game, you've got to do something, right? So, I'm not saying to start El McCrean necessarily in the 4-4-2, but maybe, in this game, if you wanted to give yourself maybe a little bit more legs, then El McCrean, who I know is pretty old as well, but he just seems to have a bit more ability going forward opposed to Power and Dicker.
Sure. Or maybe take off one of the other, you know, two midfielder wingers and change the system slightly. You know, McCreaney can play at the kind of tip of a diamond in midfield, you know, so that might be an option. I guess that brings us on quite well to kind of having a look more generally about Kilmarnock in next season. So I was kind of wondering, if you look at their back four at the moment, so Hamalainen, O'Donnell, Del Fabbro and Finlay, Hamalainen and Del Fabbro obviously there on loan, and O'Donnell's going to be out of contract at the end of the season. Finlay only has a contract to 2021. Dicker's out of contract at the end of the season. Power, just as we touched on, is 32. Burke's 36, out of contract at the end of the season. Brophy just has a contract till 2021. So I was kind of wondering about the risk for the club in terms of next season. At the moment, as it stands, would be contracted next season. It looks to me like they have Broadfoot, Finlay, Power, Brophy, Kabamba and Waters and Thomas who could be coming back on loan. That seems an incredibly low amount. You know, Motherwell seem to have 10 first teamers who would be contracted beyond this season. Hibs 14, St Johnstone about 10. What do you think of that? Do you think Kilmarnock can kind of left themselves in a potentially a bit of a mess terms of a squad crisis for next season?
Yeah, I think we sort of spoke about this in the summer, didn't we, about the situation already looked bleak in the summer going into this season. I think it could be even worse. And you know, looking at their squad just now, I honestly wouldn't be surprised next season if Kilmarnock really fell off a cliff and were in a relegation battle. I really wouldn't be surprised. They've either got to re-up a bunch of, you know, older players who, you know, at some point their performances will drop. You know, Chris Burke's done a great job in terms of his contribution, but, you know, that will, you know, falter at some point. And
yeah, if the midfield next season is Power, Dicker, Burke and one other, then, you would imagine it's not going to be as good as it was this season. Can only go kind of down, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, Hamalainen's not going to be there next season. Highly unlikely Stephen O'Donnell's not there is there next season. So you're talking about having to replace two fullbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big issue for them. The goalkeeping situation, again, some people aren't a huge fan of Brunescu, but I think he's done pretty good. So, you know, if Jamie McDonald is to come back in, they dropped him for two loanees, or sorry, for Brunescu and a loanee. I really worry about them. I think they could find themselves in serious bother, and I wouldn't even be surprised if they need to recruit that many bodies if they decided to cash in on someone like Stuart Finlay or Eamon Brophy, who have only got one more year after that. So
exactly, yeah,
which then puts them into an even bigger predicament.
I guess you could say that they've got that Greg Taylor money, however much there is of that. They'll have some compensation they got for Steve Clark. Potentially money for Brophy and Finlay, but I guess it's about what they do with it. So James Fowler, that's been in there since, you know, kind of January as the head of football operations, it'd be interesting to see what he does in terms of kind of longer term recruitment. I would say that maybe, given it looks as though they're essentially safe from relegation, but they're quite unlikely to make the top six, you know, maybe they take the point of the rest of the season as a way to, you know, try and develop an identity under Dyer and rebuild the squad in his kind of image and use that money, but, you know, maybe for the long term. Lots of work to do. I guess just a couple of final details about Kilmarnock for me. I had a look at kind of how their stats compared from the start of the season to when Alessio was dismissed and from under Dyer till now. It's a pretty small sample size, so maybe come out, you know, and see that at the end of the season to see how it plays out. But there's very little difference in terms of their attacking stats when you compare those two periods. But what I would say is that currently they have the worst expected goals per shot in the league, so they don't create good chances. I think we know this. We've spoken about Brophy and shot locations for a while, but it might be worthwhile seeing if the new setup with Kabamba has a way of changing that, if they can get some more chances, better chances through that. The other thing that I did notice is that since Dyer took over, they're now conceding about four shots a match more on average than in the preceding period to that. So that would just be an interesting thing to keep an eye on, see if, you know, defensively they run into some further problems. It was certainly, I don't know, a bit of a surprise to me when I saw that kind of clean sheet stat that they've had none under Dyer, and haven't had a single clean sheet in the league since the 4th of December. So that'd be something that they really need to correct. I think they face Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup replay this Wednesday. Then they have Celtic away, then they have Aberdeen at home, so three pretty tough matches, and then two kind of ones where they've got Hamilton away and St Mirren home, two teams that are scrapping against relegation. So, you know, I know there's no teams, Niobe, that don't have end to play for, but those are kind of quite difficult games, I would say. So in terms of Hibs, what I was wondering about Hibs was kind of looking at the midfield against Kilmarnock and thinking about the individuals they might want to fit in, and probably also just angling for an Omianga Doherty partnership in the mix somehow. With what you were saying about Boyle doing well and you know, obviously Scott Allen potentially being key, I was wondering, do you think, given that we've said that they've lacked a good defensive midfielder, and you and I maybe don't think that, for instance, Whittaker is the answer in there, and Slivka is not a defensive midfielder, I was wondering about trying to have a setup, I guess with the two up front, McNulty and Doidge, that they seem to want to have, that in effect didn't necessarily have a dedicated defensive midfielder, something with Omianga, Doherty, Boyle and Allen as a midfield, like 4-2-2-2 in a way. Could you see that working at all?
Or I want to say yes, I could see it working, but I guess my worries is more round about, I still think Hibs are extremely frail across the back line as well. So I think the problem isn't necessarily just about fitting these players in, it's about also offering that protection to Hanlon, Stevenson.
Sure.
You know, I do have question marks over those players as well. Even Ryan Porteous, when he's fit, isn't necessarily the best actual defender in terms of his positioning. So I think it's more that's part of the problem. You know, if you could get, an upgrade at left back and maybe an upgrade at centre back, then I think you could maybe trust Omianga and Doherty to, you know, cover distance, and you know, maybe you have Allen and Boyle trying to operate in different sort of spaces throughout the game, so that it maybe occupies opposition players. But I think you need to address the defensive frailties first before you can sort of move to that system. I do think they probably could still work in a diamond with those players. You could probably have Allen and Boyle sort of flipping in between positions, and, you know, sort of rotating with Doherty, and maybe Omianga a bit more at the base, just to not necessarily be an enforcer, but just someone that can, you know, put pressure on the ball if it gets into the opposition half, and he again can cover, you know, distance pretty well. So yes, I can see it happening, but only if Hibs properly address the left back and centre back area for me.
Okay, right, cool. Anything final you want to say about Hibs before we move on?
No, I was just going to quickly ask you, do you think Doidge hype train falls off?
Absolutely. I've never been on the train. Do not have a ticket. It didn't stop at my station. Fair play to the guy, 10 league goals, but 7 of those were in a 5-game spell in November and early December. So, for me, there shouldn't be a hype train. I mean, he scores a particular type of goal, and I think he's done well at getting those type of goals. But I certainly wouldn't be typing him too much.
Okay.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm the same. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Sure. So, moving down a couple of divisions to League Two in Scotland, we're going to talk now about Cove Rangers 2, Edinburgh City 1. So this was a top of the table clash, and as a result of the outcome, both teams have now played 24 matches and they're still first and second. Cove are top on 56 points, Edinburgh on 50. Cowdenbeath quite a bit behind in third on 36 points. In terms of the lead up to this game, well, Cove had actually lost their last game. They lost 3-0 away to Elgin, and had drawn 2-2 with Albion Rovers before that. And I felt kind of in general are starting to concede goals at a rate that we maybe hadn't seen before. They host Queen's Park next before travelling to Stirling Albion. Edinburgh City actually host Cove on the 28th of March. So that's a, you know, key match to look out for. Prior to this matchup, Edinburgh had beaten Annan 3-0 the week before, which had followed a 1-0 loss at home to Stirling Albion. And next up, Edinburgh host Beacon City and then travel to third place Cowdenbeath. So, a pretty interesting clash at the top of the table for two teams vying for promotion to League One. What did you kind of make of this game, Gavin? Any kind of thoughts about what you saw of it?
Yeah, so in the first half specifically, I thought it looked like some pretty difficult conditions for both teams. So players were looking like they were getting, you know, misjudging the flight of the ball, and you know there was a couple of times for both teams where I felt defenders were caught underneath the ball. Also, you know, I think there was one chance where it looked like it was a long ball from Cove that was played over the top. It looked like the wind carried it that little bit further, which then caught the Edinburgh City defender. I think it was Balotone out, and I think it was Mitch Megginson hit the ball just wide. But yeah, it just looked like a really difficult first half, and the conditions didn't really ease up over the course of the game, to be honest. But the first half, there was a few sort of half chances for each team, but I just felt that, you know, the conditions, especially the wind in that that first 45, made it really difficult for any sort of real, you know, good play to come through from either side. I think we've both been impressed with some of Cove's stuff this season. We've both seen Edinburgh City and seen how they want to try and play, etc. So yeah, I just felt like the conditions were definitely against both teams in that first 45 minutes.
Yeah, I think we could excuse some of the football that was on play because of the conditions. You're right, it was very windy, and that's the kind of main thing that I took away from it, that it was causing some errors for defenders and kind of their judgment of balls and control of them. So the goals all came in the second half. So shortly after half-time, and I think the 48th minute, Edinburgh City opened the scoring with Scott Shepherd's goal. What did you make of the opening goal? Any thoughts about it?
I feel like it's like the story of my thoughts on football tonight, but it was pretty poor defending. It felt really sloppy and slack from Cove. I don't know how Scott Shepherd is able to turn and get a shot on goal in the Cove 6-yard box. That's just insane. And I know it does break to him and he does well to react pretty quickly, but there should be someone tighter to him. And the full play was just, it was just scrappy. And I think Cove will be extremely disappointed. And I think from the times that we've watched Cove, I've never really been enamoured by their goalkeeper. And maybe for me, again, it's difficult with the conditions, etc., but maybe I felt like he could have been a little bit more commanding for the ball coming in the first point, because it wasn't exactly like it was an outswinging ball going, you know, away from him. I felt like it was in an area where I would want my keeper to come and try and get something on it. But yeah, just I don't know. I just felt it was pretty poor overall. But well done to Scottish Sheps for getting the quick turn and you know, getting the ball in the net.
Yeah, I think that's fair criticism of McKenzie and goals, that I think throughout this game and maybe some games we've seen before, doesn't look that great with the kind of ball above him at corners. But again, maybe there was a bit of a wind issue. There was quite a few corners in this game where, you know, the defending looked pretty bad, but I think that might have been due to finding it difficult to judge with things holding up in the air and stuff unexpectedly. In saying that, though, the second ball, you know, once it wasn't defended well, I think that, you know, Cove should have prevented Shepherd, like you said, being able to turn and dispatch that. I thought up to that point it was relatively even, and there was maybe going to be, you know, a mistake or, you know, something aided by the wind that would open the scoring. The equaliser wasn't really down to, I guess, a mistake. It was quite an incredible strike. What did you make of the equaliser that we saw there from Higgins?
First of all, let me take that as a challenge for you to say there was not a mistake. So I actually thought, you know, let's not take away the strike was great from Higgins. But again, I feel like I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the mood I'm in just now where I'm not seeing anything in a good light. But I felt the positioning for Liam Court. He was number 26 for Edinburgh City, I think. And he sort of gets pulled out to the ball on the sideline when there's already sort of two Edinburgh City players out there, and it leaves Higgins that sort of 5-yard space, which, you know, for the ball breaking out It gives Higgins the opportunity to get that shot away, whereas I felt that Cort maybe could have been a little bit more aware of his surroundings, aware of the situation. I don't think he needed to go out to the ball as well, because there was already, you know, players there. And then because he's been pulled out to the wider area, he then doesn't necessarily react to or think about what might happen if the ball, you know, comes out from the box exactly like it does. So maybe, again, I feel like I'm being probably hypercritical here, but it was some strike, and a lot of credit has to be given to Higgins. Nothing the keeper can really do about that. I think it must have been extremely hard to judge that from a goalkeeping point of view, and, you know, an actual incredible effort. But, yeah, my takeaway was Cort could have done better. But, again, that's, yeah, I think I'm maybe being a bit of a dick there.
Well, I mean, it's normally my role to be so super critical, so I'm glad that you're taking up the mantle while I seem to be overcome with a weird out of body optimism and positivity. Let's move on now to
the kind of, that was Freaky Friday.
Could be. So beyond the kind of equaliser for Higgins, I felt after that in the second half there was quite a lot of chances for Edinburgh City, and they must be a little bit gutted, because of course they conceded a sucker punch at the death from you know, the goal from the corner that was pretty badly defended.
Yeah.
Rory McAllister scoring, who I have to give a shout out to based on his birthday, born on May the 13th, same as me and a couple of other pretty good footballers in Yaya Toure and Romelu Lukaku. So well done to him. Also, you know, Harvey Keitel, Stevie Wonder, not sure how good they are at football. maybe that's a thing to rank one day and see where I lie in the six or so people there's a football. Me or Stevie Wonder, huh? Who'd score a penalty first? Anyway, Rory McAllister with, you know, essentially a kind of bundled in effort from corner. Do you think that, you know, do you agree with me that maybe Edinburgh City would feel that they let us get away from them somewhat, or do you think it was kind of merited? What are your thoughts? And I guess beyond that, in terms of the league now, do you think Edinburgh City can catch Cove with there being a 6-point gap? What do you think?
Yes, to your first point, I think there was a couple of warning signs for Edinburgh City from corners. It looked like Cove had a few chances from corners. I think when I watch this go back, there's about two or three Cove players that lose their marker pretty easily. You know, with near post runs, and then the defence is just sort of a little bit all over the place, and that maybe leaves McAllister the opportunity to sort of scramble at home. But it felt like it was maybe avoidable again. You know, I think that Edinburgh City just got themselves caught out in terms of that. You know, mentally it must have been hard, right? At that point, the rain was absolutely battering down, the wind was swirling. You've played 88 minutes in the freezing cold in Cove. So you can kind of understand how maybe there's mental lapses, but for Edinburgh City, I think they'll be pretty devastated to lose late on. I felt overall like both teams had some pretty good chances, and a draw probably would have been a roundabout a fair result. I guess to your next point, I think that it'll be extremely difficult now for Edinburgh City to catch Cove, and I think the league will be Cove's. They obviously lost Declan Glass in January, but brought in Rory McAllister. Obviously totally different players, but I think that's going to be enough to see them get this over the line. I think there's maybe just that little bit more quality in the Cove team opposed to Edinburgh City, especially with our, you know, last year's favourite Blair Henderson sort of fallen off the wagon in terms of his contribution. So I think it will be difficult for Edinburgh City. I even think it will be difficult for them to go up through the playoffs now that Queen's Park have, you know, done a lot of things in January as well. So I think it might be another season where Edinburgh City are the sort of bridesmaids rather than you know, the ones going forward. So
might feel relatively confident next season, depending on who comes down, you know, with Cove and potentially Queen's Park out of the league. So, yeah, we'll see. So I guess to move on now, let's talk about Europa League. So this Thursday, there's two key matches in the Europa League, as far as we're concerned. So on Thursday, the early kickoff is FC Copenhagen hosting Celtic. So let's talk about that one first. This is the round of 32, first leg, and the return leg is on the 27th of February. So, you know, just a week later. I think in terms of Copenhagen, I was going to just kind of ask you initially, do you have any thoughts about them or about Celtic currently? Anything you want to kind of run through about either team?
Yeah, so I guess there was something that just sort of stood out to me. Copenhagen, I think, as extremely without looking into loads of finer detail, I don't think they're going to be good enough to cause Celtic much of a trouble. I'm really confident in Celtic getting the job done here. I think that there's, looking at the Copenhagen squad, it just seems, it doesn't really have names to me that I think Celtic should be concerned about. Damon Doi, you know, 34-year-old striker, I can't see him causing Julien Aier, sure, etc. too much problems. There's Victor Fischer, I think, former Ajax player, is a doubt for the game. I'm not sure if he's been ruled out as of yet.
I think Fischer is very unlikely to play. So yeah. Fischer is the main kind of key man for Copenhagen, yeah, in my view. 9 assists in the league, which is way more than anybody else. Yeah. But he hasn't played since December, since picking up an injury in a winter break training camp. They were in Portugal and they played in some sort of, you know, international kind of tournament there between Scandinavian teams, which they got to the final of, but, you know, Fischer hasn't played in those games. He hasn't played in their first league game back, which was on Friday just past. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any prospect of him being, you know, a player for at least the first leg, which is a major, major bonus for Celtic, I think. I think that Copenhagen, particularly without Fischer in the team, really struggle in terms of chance creation. So they're involved in quite a lot of low scoring games. They lost last Friday 1-0. Before that they had a 2-0 win, a 2-1 win, a 1-0 win. They are second in the league behind Midtjylland, but Midtjylland have a game in hand. Copenhagen are 10 points clear of third place, so they must feel, you know, fairly happy about how things are going in the league, I guess. They've scored 37 goals in 21 games in the league, so, you know, it's not that they're scoring, you know, just a goal a game, but it's not a lot. And certainly in their Europa League, they came second in Group B, behind Malmo and ahead of Dynamo Kiev and Lugano, but I mean, the results in the Europa League were incredibly low scoring. They won 2 games, drew 3 and lost 1, but they only scored 5 goals. They conceded 4. So they basically, their 2 wins over Lugano, who came bottom, and a couple of draws with Kiev got them through. Be interesting to see if, you know, things have changed for them after the winter break. In terms of kind of danger men or anything outside Fischer, well, I mean, they've got a midfielder, Zeka, who is, I think he's a pretty good kind of defensive midfielder, ball winner. So he's the main guy who will be trying to break up play, trying to intercept things. And when I watch them, it looks like out of possession, the two guys up front try and press quite aggressively and try and intercept it too. So, you know, that's the kind of main things I took away from them, that they don't generate a lot of shots. About 7 on average in their Europa League group games, but they're able to really limit the quality of chances they concede. And I think, you know, a lot of the time they keep the opposition limited to kind of headers from dangerous areas. And I think they do that through that fairly aggressive press, through Zeka being quite dominant in midfield, and then their centre back pairing being quite experienced and you know, used to playing together. So that's my kind of takeaway from them. I would say that Celtic will need to ensure that they think about how they bypass the pressing forwards. I think that, you know, as we maybe saw against Aberdeen at the weekend, initially if Celtic are aggressively pressed at the back, then some of their players, such as Beaton, have a tendency to go long, Fraser Foster as well. And then, you know, if they're going long to Griffiths, he's not going to win it in the air against the kind of dominant defender. So I think that's something for, you know, Celtic to be mindful of, see if they can bypass the press. I think they could probably also win the ball back off Copenhagen's forwards, who seem to turn over the ball a lot. So there might be a chance for Celtic to maybe think about approaching this in a slightly more counter-attacking way. And I also think that Copenhagen can be suspect from corners. So if Griffiths can get the same sort of delivery into Julien that we've seen recently, that might be a good option for Celtic. The thing I was maybe going to ask you about the game was, do you think Celtic should or will stick with the 3-5-2 or revert to 4-2-3-1? Any thoughts about that?
I think for this game, 3-5-2 makes sense. I think it looks like Copenhagen like to play two up top, so I think if you can give yourself that extra security, it makes sense for Celtic. The system seems to be working for them overall. I think I'm glad that you sort of mentioned it there, the Griffiths to Julien cheat code. You know, playing 3-5-2 is pretty much the only way you can make Griffiths start. I don't see how you can start him in a 4-2-3-1. So I think for Celtic it makes perfect sense to stick 3-5-2. I do hope that Bolognoli gets back in to the starting lineup for this game. I know Greg Taylor picked up an injury at the weekend, and Johnny Hayes is still there. So yeah, I'm hoping Bolognoli can come back in for this one.
I doubt he will. I think, you know, you can see the trust maybe isn't there for Lennon with Bolognoli, and the trust for misguided reasons is there with Hayes. I think that'll be an issue for Celtic potentially. That's going to be a pity if they have Hayes in that role, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Maybe we'll be proved wrong. And I think I probably agree with you that as much as maybe I thought at the weekend against Aberdeen, things improved for Celtic once they went to 4-2-3-1 in terms of the kind of natural width that gave them up the park. You're right, playing against the two forwards, maybe having the three at the back, not only gives them security, but gives them that little bit more in terms of being able to bypass that press. If Beaton, Julien and Ayer can be encouraged to play the ball between them and then one of them dribble out of defence rather than it just ending up with Beaton and getting launched. That'd be my view on that. The other thing I was going to ask is, given that you mentioned probably sticking with 3-5-2, does that mean that Ryan Christie doesn't start? And do you think that's an issue? And should he be put in a team somehow? And how would you make that happen?
Ryan Christie should be upset. He's having a great season. I don't know how he fits into the 3-5-2 though. Celtic have got a good problem in terms of the squad depth that they have, right? So it's definitely a problem in my eyes, because I don't think if I'm Ryan Christie that, you know, coming off the bench when you need to change the game or if you're coming off the bench for the last 15-20 minutes just to get a run out, I don't think that will particularly suit him in terms of, you know, where he's at in his career. But I don't see how he fits anywhere else in the 3-5-2. I really don't.
What about instead of Nicham in one of the kind of, you know, 3-8, 3-10, whatever roles you're calling that in midfield?
And then you've just got the problem with what do you do with Nicham? You know what I mean?
He's on the bench then. I guess, you know, that I'm not sure if they're directly exchangeable positions in that way, but I mean that might be one way to do it. In my view, really, I would be interested in seeing Christie play instead of Griffiths up front, but like you said, that sort of removes the cheat code of the Griffiths corner to Julien, and I guess you would say that Griffiths can occupy a back line and get more space for Edward through doing that. But I think that it might be interesting to see what Christie's pressing does in terms of helping Celtic turn over the ball high up the park. Thought their pressing was quite interesting against Aberdeen. There was some good elements of that when they worked together. I think, you know, that might, you know, be an added kind of edge of dynamism. But anyway, yeah, so I guess fair enough for now. Christie maybe has to wait his turn because of the 3-5-2. What about a prediction? Do you have a score prediction or a result prediction for this game?
I'm going to say 2-0 Celtic.
Okay, in the first leg away from home, yeah. And then I take it you think that Celtic are going to go through overall in the two legs?
Yep, okay. I'm really confident in this one for Celtic. I think Copenhagen look a little bit fragile in terms of how they're going to create against Celtic. And I think, you know, even if Celtic, like you mentioned, try and bait them a little bit and play on the counter, I still think Celtic will be extremely successful in that. I think that... even so, the Copenhagen forwards like to press. I think that if you get past that, I think there's maybe a bit of a softer underbelly if they're exposed.
Okay, great. Looking forward to this game, and definitely looking forward to the other Scottish team in Europe, which is Rangers away to SC Braga. So I guess, do you have any thoughts about how either of these two teams are doing at the moment? A wee bit of a contrast, really, between these two teams in terms of recent results. You want to talk us through that at all?
Yeah, so Rangers are definitely in a bit, not I wouldn't say turmoil, but there's definitely... the gears aren't fully working right now. Whereas Braga, since they've changed their manager to Ruben Amorim, they are absolutely flying, beating Porto, Benfica, Sporting Lisbon, all the big teams, and are now up to third in the Portuguese table when they were sitting round about 11th, just before he took over. So yeah, I think this is going to be an extremely difficult task for Rangers. They're facing a completely different opponent, opposed to when the draw came out. When the draw came out, I think it was the trickier of the two for the Scottish teams. But at the same time, I felt that it was winnable. Whereas now, I think it really changes. I think Braga look like they could be really interesting to watch, and actually, I'm quite excited to see Francisco Trancao, who's just signed for Barcelona.
Yep.
I'm really excited to see how he does. I think he could give Tavernier an absolute nightmare.
I'm maybe expecting to see him on the right if he starts, and be interesting to see if Barisic is back or if that's Andy Halliday. Yeah. Be very difficult. Just to kind of echo the things that you said about Braga, I think that they've had an incredible turnaround since Amorim came in. So just in terms of detail around that, so Braga are now third, as you said, in the league, a point ahead of Sporting, quite a wee bit behind Benfica and Porto, but they beat Benfica on Saturday 1-0. Although, having watched that, I felt they were a wee bit lucky. They won the League Cup against Porto recently, and in fact, they have, in this kind of last stretch under Amorim, they've beaten Porto twice, so once in the league, once in that cup final. They've beaten Sporting twice, once on the way to that cup win and once in the league, and of course the Benfica win that I mentioned. They're undefeated in their last 10 games in all competitions. I would say that in terms of having watched them a wee bit, they're really good in transition, very, very quick. They tended, at least in what I saw them under Amorim, to play three at the back. So sort of like a 3-4-3 in possession, maybe a 5-2-3 of sorts out of possession. They have a guy called Paulinho as a centre-forward, and then they've got very good wingers. So you mentioned Trincao there, who Barcelona recently bought for about £30 million, but have kept there till the end of the season. He's 20 years old. He looks pretty frightening. He's got a frightening-looking radar, at least from his very limited Europa League minutes so far. Very good dribbler, can also set up chances for others, and I think they've got a very good group of quite dangerous attackers, so Galeno and Horta as well. And I felt that the interplay from those guys is really nice, particularly down the flanks. They can play 1-2s and get in behind fullbacks or centre backs, and then play cutbacks, make really, really good, you know, high percentage chances through kind of cutting defences in that way. And I think, on the contrary, I think that there might be an opportunity, as much as that means that there's going to be a big test for Rangers fullbacks, there might be an opportunity for Rangers to take a hold of things through the middle a little bit, because it creates a lot of work for the kind of central midfielders for Braga. And at times they allow the game to get a bit stretched between attack and defence, so that there's a bit of space. So maybe that could be an opportunity for Rangers to overrun them a little bit. And then I also felt that their centre backs have an error in them, concentration error, positional error, or just even if you run at them and overload them a wee bit, they can get a little bit panicked. So that might be a chance for Rangers, maybe when they've got hold of the game through midfield, but also if there's a way to counter attack, or even kind of counter a counter attack. I don't know if Rangers are that capable of that at the moment. That's maybe something that, you know, I think, thinking back, you maybe Rangers were, I mean, they don't get as many opportunities to do that in league, but if you think about maybe, you know, Tavernier maybe stepping up and intercepting a stray pass and then Rangers countering, that kind of thing. I'm not sure if we've seen so much of that recently, but that would be, you know, something I think could be a a kind of key thing for Rangers to think about. Any other thoughts for either of the teams?
Yeah, it's just a couple of things for me, just on Braga before Rangers. There was it was really interesting to hear you describe their forward play. I got a sort of feeling of it was like Liverpool light, like in terms of it was quick. You know, all three forward players are pretty quick, and I felt that Paulinho, Trincao, Horta were quite interchangeable in terms of where they occupy, which I think will be really difficult for the Rangers defenders in terms of being able to adjust to that. I fully expect Glenn Kamara to start this game. I think that he has an ability to potentially win the ball back will be important. I know he's a little bit out of form, but I would rather see Glenn Kamara than potentially Stephen Davis in this game. I don't think that'll be the case. And I know Davis has got some, you know, good interception numbers as well, but I feel that Davis, for me, for Rangers, is looking a little bit off the pace. A little bit better at the weekend, but in the last sort of five or six games, I think you're seeing that you shouldn't have him playing every game. And if you wanted to play Stephen Davis, then maybe you had to rest him against Livingston if you wanted the best out of him for a game like this. In terms of the one other thing I noticed when I looked at Braga, it felt like Ricardo Saggio is almost like their equivalent of James Tavernier. He wants to play really high up and wants to be involved in the attacking phase. So maybe down the left side, if Rangers can win the ball back, then there's an opportunity for Kent or Hadji to attack the space in that area. And I think that's what causes the uncertainty in the Braga defence. I think Bruno Viana, I think it was, didn't look overly comfortable on the ball. So I wonder if Morelos can be really aggressive against him and try and, you know, really attack him when he's got the ball at his feet. He looks like he just wants to get rid of it. He kind of reminded me of the way that Katic is for Rangers when Katic has the ball at his feet. Just, I think there's a couple of things that Rangers can try to do. Your point about counter attack is for Rangers is so accurate all season. Long I've said that Rangers, you know, just for some games need to try and bait teams into not the false sense of security, but coming a little bit higher, maybe having bigger gaps between the phases. And, you know, Kent and Hadji look pretty quick. So, and we know Morelos isn't a slouch either. So there's opportunity for Rangers players to drive straight at the opposition if they can turn the ball over quickly and progress it quickly.
I think this could in some way be a game that gives Rangers that chance. This is kind of it's a clash of two styles in a way, these two teams, I think, where in some ways one team's strength is going to be the other team's weakness and vice versa in a way. So that'll be really interesting to see how it goes. I was wondering if you thought Gerrard might make any big changes for the game. I mean, we've kind of seen lately, sort of to an extent, Rangers sort of trying a 4-2-3-1. And I felt that one of the issues for that is that when Hadji's wanting to receive the ball in central spaces, Rangers, particularly if it's Katic, as you mentioned, that has the ball, they don't necessarily have the kind of exceptional ball-playing centre-back that can play it to him in the hole. So I was wondering whether, you know, it might be that there's no point kind of doing that against Braga if that's not going to pay off. And also, they might want to pack the midfield a little bit more, given, you know, that they could dominate in that area. So they might think this is the one to go back to that more flat three central midfielders and have Kamara and Jack and maybe Arfield or Davis in there. What do you think? Do you think that Gerrard will make any significant changes? And if so, what for this game? Anything you foresee?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. So I think the 4-3-3 is probably likely to come back, or, you know, Rangers fans get really caught up about formations and positions when it comes to Kent, Hadji, etc. But I think that, you know, that 4-3-3 with the flat three in the middle will come back in this game. I think with the threat of the Braga forwards and how they like to play, I think that extra security is needed in this game. In terms of surprises, the only one I can particularly see is maybe Edmondson over Katic. I don't feel that his strengths defensively in this game are the strengths of Braga's attacking play.
Sure.
I don't think Paulinho, you know, he looks quite an all-rounded centre-forward, but I don't think that they're going to particularly play a load of balls into the box for Katic to then head away.
Yeah, exactly.
So that would be the one for me. And Edmondson, he looked okay, I think, I think it was the Hamilton game. It's a big ask to put him in, and he probably won't, because I think Gerrard does have this almost over-reliance, overly trusting of players right now, and he maybe needs to realise that, and a little bit more sort of horses for courses in terms of how Rangers set up. And yeah, that would be the one.
I was wondering that if it hadn't been for the fact that Defoe's had this injury, would Gerrard have tried to test out like a 3-at-the-back system, like a 3-5-2, before this to see how that would have worked? I mean, maybe, you know, mainly defensive. But I guess the flip side is that, if you're playing against three up front, then sometimes just sticking to what you're used to, having the 4 at the back, even though the folks might be a little bit suspect defensively, at least then people know what their roles are. There's, if you're 3 at the back, 5-3-2 or whatever, there's a little bit of uncertainty sometimes as to who's responsible for doing what in the channels and wide spaces and so on. Anyway, I guess the other thing that I wanted to ask you as well was, given the kind of fixture pile up for Rangers and given the gap that's opened up in the league and maybe the pressure on Gerrard to close that and maybe win a trophy, I was wondering if they might be at all tempted to rest players for this game and prioritise other things in some way. So they just played on Sunday, obviously, with the Livingston game being delayed due to Storm Dennis, and they now play this Thursday, then they play Sunday again, then they play next Wednesday against Braga, and then the Saturday after that they have the Scottish Cup quarter final against, I guess that's Hearts. So what do you think? Any temptation to not prioritise, to rest up people at all?
No.
Okay, cool. I agree with you. I don't think that's kind of in Gerrard's nature necessarily, and I'm not too sure if the squad is strong enough to do that necessarily anyway, or if there's maybe, you know, in some areas there's not a definitive starting pair, like at centre-back or central midfield.
And again, it's a bit of a wild card, unlikely. I think he sticks with, you know, if you were to ask what the Rangers team was to be for Thursday, I think it's quite predictable. The only change for me, I think, might happen would be Edmondson over Katic based on what the opponent's strengths are. I think the rest that you would expect to play.
Do you know if Barisic is supposed to be back?
I think he's 50-50. I would go for a 50% Borna Barisic over 100% Andy Halliday every single day of the week.
But, you know, if you're Barisic and you want your career to last a decent length, then maybe you should. We'll see. I think that would be a pretty major upgrade for Rangers.
Appreciate
that. It sounded like Halliday played quite well on Sunday, maybe against Livingston, but it definitely changes things systemically for Rangers, absolutely, having him in instead of Barisic. Anyway, so I guess finally, what's your prediction for this game and for the legs overall?
2-1 Braga this leg. I'm going to say that Rangers do score, but Braga, I think it's going to be the front three are going to be extremely difficult for Rangers to deal with. I think my warning just now is round about looking at how Tavernier copes in this game. I think if Halliday plays, he plays almost the John Flanagan-esque left back and is a little bit deeper.
He's almost playing like a third centre back against Kilmarnock from
exactly.
So 2-1 for Braga in the first game, and what about in the second leg? I mean, have you got an overall prediction? Do you think Rangers are going to go through? Can we send the gravy? Or
so I've been pretty negative this full episode in terms of my outlook on football, but I'm going to say Rangers get a 1-0 home win and go through on away goals, and the gravy is flowing.
Love it. Okay, great. I'm a little bit worried about this game, the away leg at least. I think there'll be quite a lot of goals in it potentially, but overall I think Rangers are going to go through. Really, really hope so. So that kind of concludes things for this episode of the Pure Football podcast. I guess just a reminder to look out for the Pure Euro episode, which will be coming soon. Really excited for you all to hear that show. Thanks again, you know, for listening today and for all the other times that you have. Gavin, do you have anything you want to add before we go?
No, just thanks for everyone that's tuned in, and be sure to check out the Pure Euro, which will be coming out at some point this week as well.
Oh yeah, there's also an excellent new article about Partick Thistle and what they need to do to rescue their season on the Pure Football website right now. So go and have a read of that at purefootball.com. Thanks again for listening. Bye bye.